www.radiohead.co.uk.
Scoff and Quaff show with Jules Serkin on Channel Radio.
Good morning, listeners. Now, you'll probably realise this isn't Jules Serkin. My name is Peter Chapman, and I'm standing in for Jules today as she's sunning herself in sunny Spain. And with me in the studio today, I have three veritably good-looking guests, mainly because Jules isn't here, and she can't get her hands on them. So we have on the show today Andy Reason, or Dr. Andy Reason, I should give him his full title, from Anno Distillers, which is a craft gin company from Marden. We then have Master Tea Blender, Mr. Alex Probin of Blends for Friends. And then we have a youngster amongst us all, I think, probably the youngest of us all, Luke Wolf of Wino Wolf is his Twitter handle, at Wino Wolf, who is a viticulturist. I think I've said that right.
Yes.
Good. So we're going to have a liquid day today, basically talking gin, talking tea and talking wine. So unfortunately, Jules, you'll just have to stick with your schnapps on the seafront in Spain there. Hope you're all listening in. We're going to start off today with Anno Distillers, and I'm going to come to Andy in a few minutes, but I thought we'd just play a little song to start the whole proceedings off, and we thought what could be more suitable than a little song called Gin Soaked Boy.
I'm the darkness in the light. I'm the leftness in the right. I'm the rightness in the wrong. I'm the shortness in the long. I'm the goodness in the bad. I'm the saneness in the mad. I'm the sadness in the joy. I'm the gin in the gin-soaked boy. The gin-soaked boy. Ba 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 la da. 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 Ba 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 ba. I'm the ghost in the machine. I'm the genius in the gene. I'm the beauty in the beast. I'm the sunset in the east. I'm the ruby in the dust. I'm the trust in the mistrust. I'm the Trojan horse in Troy. I'm the gin in the gin-soaked boy. The gin-soaked boy. Ba 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 la da. 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 Ba 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 ba. I'm the tiger's empty cage. I'm the mystery's final page. slave you'll never free. I'm the truth you'll never know. I'm the place you'll never go. I'm the sound you'll never hear. I'm the course you'll never steer. I'm the will you'll not destroy. I'm the gin in the gin song.
Channel Radio.
Well, that was Gin Soaked Boy by the Divine Comedy. That, well, aptly introduces my next guest, or my first guest today, and that is Dr. Andy Reason of Anno Distillers. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Peter.
So, tell me, first and foremost, how and when was Anno formed? It, I mean, should sound as though it was formed in A-N-O-O 1900 or something, but you're not that old.
No, I'm not that old. Anno was formed when Norman and I, Anno actually comes from Andy A-N and Norman N-O, so Norman's my business partner. We both worked together for GlaxoSmithKline for 10 years or so at the same site in Kent. And we had to close the site as part of R&D rationalisation. So we decided to do something completely different. Midlife crisis, we decided to open a distillery. We both love spirit, so we thought we'd have a go at making some.
Very good, very good. And so how long have you been going now?
We started the company in 2011 and spent quite a long time, 18 months, developing our gin recipe. We then got the premises in 2012 in Marden, in the middle of Kent. We got the still installed at the end of 2012, started distilling on the large scale in the middle of 2013, and launched with our gin in October 2013.
So it's about nearly coming up to 2 years. This
nearly 2 years, yes.
Nearly 2 years. And how's it going generally?
Going very well. We launched with the gin, which has now got a gold medal at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition. It was voted as best product in Kent, food product, so we're very pleased with that as well. We followed up with an elderflower and vodka, a slow gin, and we've now moved on to a whiskey that will be released in 3 years.
Right, so expanding well, expanding well.
Sales are going well. We've got a lot in the pipeline, so some good ideas, and now we're consolidating on getting a return, going into profit.
And what makes your gin different? I mean, there's gin and there's gin. I mean, most people would think of gin as being sort of like Gordon's or Tanqueray or whatever. What makes your gin so special?
Our gin is what we would call smooth and complex. We've got a blend of 16 different botanicals, many of them from Kent, such as lavender, hops, elderflower, rosehip, samphire.
And samphire seems the strangest ingredient to me.
Samphire is something that we put in fairly early. It gives sweet grassy notes when we distill, and it's quite distinctive as a garnish. Very good as an alternative to an olive in a dry martini. Goes beautifully with our gin.
Right. And how many stills did you have to make, or distillations did you have to make till you got the secret formula that you now have?
We started off by going up, techie scientists, we're both PhD chemists, so we went up to London, to the British Library, and spent a couple of weeks researching the history of gin. We came up with over 300 different flavouring components that people had used over the centuries, By law, all we need is juniper, alcohol and water. The rest is really down to the distiller to put their spin on the gin. We picked around 50 from that 300 and distilled each of them separately. Right. Then took that down to 25 that we really liked, and then did lots of blending. Lots of volunteers, no shortage of people coming round to try gin.
Yeah.
And we ended up with a very good recipe, which when we went to professional tasters, they loved. A little bit of tweaking when we went to the large scale, and launched and very successfully.
I remember coming to the distillery. You've got a big still that brews distills the large batch, but you did all this on very small scale in a small distillery, sort of a still, wasn't it?
Our development still is 2 litres, very simple, a little still, somewhat akin to what you would expect to see in Scotland, but on a very, very small scale. Doesn't have a rectification column, which our big still does. We set up originally in my house in Maidstone in a corner of my wife's kitchen, said we'd be there for a few weeks. And after 18 months, she said, enough's enough. And
get out.
So that's when we got the premises.
Okay. And in products in the pipeline at the moment, you say you've got the gin, a vodka, and now a whiskey. Is that right?
Yes, we've just distilled the first malt whiskey ever made in Kent. We worked with Robert Wicks at Western Brewery. So he did the fermentation for us, and we did the distillations. The new make spirit, we can't call it whiskey until it's been in the barrel for 3 years. So
it's a long-term investment, basically.
It's a long-term investment. We're not quite sure where the whiskey is going to take us, but we're very pleased with the spirit that we've distilled.
Can you tell this early on when you distill a spirit?
Yes, the spirit's come over beautifully smooth, very fruity, very aromatic. We haven't gone for a strongly peated malt. We've used an unpeated, so it's a lighter whiskey. But it will be very Kentish.
Akin to what sort of whiskies would you say?
Much more akin to perhaps a Speyside, much lighter style.
Right, okay.
It will be quite unique.
And Anno Gin, is it exported at the moment? Is it abroad?
We're not exporting at the moment. We're just starting to look into the export market.
Okay, so Nurse Liz, if you're listening from Maryland, which I know you are, I think there's an opportunity here that you could possibly import some Anno Gin into Maryland. I know we've got listeners today, actually. I've had a tweet from Mr. Stephen Ayling, who I know is on Paxos at the moment. I won't tell you what he's actually asked me because it's rather rude, but that's typical for Mr. Ayling. And I think we've also got some listeners in Singapore as well at the moment. So you're going global at the moment, Andy.
We are. We are on the Britannia in the Crow's Nest Bar. So that's sailing around the seas. And lots of people are drinking the gin as they float around the oceans.
Right. Good, good, good. Okay. And what I'd like to do at the moment is try and bring in some of my other guests here. We've got Alex Probin as the tea man and obviously Luke Wolfe as the wine man. Now, you've both tasted Alex's gin. What did you think of it?
Andy's gin.
Andy's gin. Sorry, I beg your pardon.
I can do a gin tea if you want me to, but
We were discussing that on the way down here today, weren't we, gents? A particular gin tea. We won't mention any names.
We sampled it a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? So very nice indeed out on your veranda, in fact. So there you go.
Yeah. I myself found it really smooth, really easy drinking, full of flavour. It was a very, very clean gin. And I just wanted to ask, with regards to adding the botanicals, is that something you add to the still, or do you put it in the neck of the still? How does that work exactly?
We actually use a mix technique where we have 8 of our botanicals which go into the still, so they're actually boiled to extract the flavour. And the more delicate hops and the floral notes go in something called a botanicals basket, where they're just vapour infused. So it's a mixed extraction technology. More difficult, but it works very well for us, gives a very high quality product.
And how many times did you have to do it till you got it right, sort of thing? I mean, were there disastrous occasions or, you know, stuff that you had to throw away, or is it, you know?
No. We're development chemists, so we spent all of our lives working in laboratories, pilot plants and full manufacturing plants. So the science behind what we do was fairly straightforward. And we had a few surprises in terms of perhaps the fruits that we thought we'd include from Kent in the Garden of England. Mm-hmm. Actually gave quite sharp spirits, which is why we moved away from them and used floral notes.
I mean, you mentioned a coconut and... lime gin?
There are some pretty interesting gins out there. There's one called Hoxton's, which has got coconut and grapefruit in it.
Right.
Very dominant flavours. It's very
unusual. To my palate, I must admit.
It makes some interesting cocktails.
Yeah. That's very diplomatic of you, Andy. Very diplomatic. And in terms of the challenges for, I mean, you're a small company and self-funded. I mean, what is the biggest challenge for you at the moment?
I think moving forward, knowing how fast to go and, you know, not overstretching ourselves. There are three of us in the company. The other member of our team is Kim, my youngest daughter, who leads the sales and marketing. We're just bringing an apprentice in later on this year. Perhaps in August she should be joining us. So they're big decisions, how fast to go. The export market is pretty significant, lots of rules and regulations,
yeah.
Quite a few risks for a small company.
And what sort of quantities are you distilling at the moment?
At the moment, we're doubling our sales this year. That's the target. So we should be up to somewhere around 12,000 to 14,000 bottles. And we're aiming to grow at about 50% growth after that.
Right. And where can people purchase Anno at the moment?
We're in the small independent wine merchants, farm shops, high quality delis, online. We sell ourselves, Master of Malt, Ibrea,
right.
Drink Supermarket, etc. So we've got
can
a number of
retailers.
Can they
buy direct from you as well?
People can buy online. They can come to the distillery.
Let me give you a plug on the website. I believe it's www.annodistilleries.com. Is that correct?
Annodistillers.co.uk.
Not the S on the end. Apologies. And your Twitter handle, if I remember correctly, is Anno Distillers as well, at Anno Distillers.
Yes.
Yeah, good. And so the future looking bright for you?
It's looking very good at the moment. We've got lots to do, plenty to keep us busy, and we're really looking forward to the rest of this year and on to the new year.
Yeah, and so your leg injury from skiing accident hasn't slowed you down too much?
The broken leg has slowed me down considerably. I'm now leaving the crutches behind. Norman's looking very slim and fit, and I've saved him a fortune in gym fees.
Oh, jolly good. Well, thanks very much. And obviously, if you've got any questions that you want to put to Andy, please do just tweet me on at the Chef's Net. I've just had my sister-in-law send me through a tweet, and she says, "Don't you think that Peter's got a face for radio?" Isn't that kind of a...
Wouldn't like to comment on that.
Thank you very much, Luke. Anyway, what we're going to do now, we're going to play another song, and then we're going to come on to our next guest, which is going to be Mr. Alex Probyn, who's going to start talking about tea.
Tea time won't be the same without Madonna. That's where we used to meet each day. And then we used to sit a while, drink our afternoon tea. I'll take afternoon tea.
Afternoon tea.
If you take it with me.
Afternoon tea.
You take as long as you like. 'Cause I like you. Like you talking to me, because you ease my mind. Ba 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 ba. Ba 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 ba. They said that Donna walked away.
Pubs in Kent.com.
Well, there we go. That was Afternoon Tea by the Kinks. And now we're going to move on to Alex Probrin, who is a master tea blender. Now, I've known Alex probably for a couple of years now, and he produces some very fine tea blends, both loose and in tea bags. And his company is called Blends for Friends, and he's going to, I think we're going to actually have a live tea tasting here in the studio. Is that correct, Alex?
That's right. I'm going to try and multitask here and talk and brew tea at the same time. So
well, I'm sure,
so
I'm sure you'll
me.
Be very capable. I've already got a question come in for you, Alex.
Oh, well, that's great.
And this is from, I believe, a gentleman by the name of Ivan Zidek, who is based in Switzerland, of all places. So okay. We are truly global today. Get that one, eh, Jules? But Ivan has asked, this is for Alex Probin, tea in a bag, like one of your fab little pyramids, or loose?
Well, quite frankly, it really just depend on your own personal taste, what you're after. Majority of what we do is loose leaf tea, but then we can also put that into the pyramid tea bags as well, which is exactly the same blends, exactly the same tea, and it's just the convenience of a tea bag there. That said, quite frankly, most people will always look and have a good strong English breakfast or a builder's type brew, particularly here in the UK. As just an early morning start, and really, if that's how you like your tea, have your tea that way as well.
I think some people feel it's a bit of a faff putting tea in a loose tea in a pot and brewing a teapot like that.
Well, I think there are ways of making it easier. Mm-hmm. And one thing you can do is just have a loose leaf tea and use a cafetiere, for example.
Yeah, you were telling me that earlier, and I've never even thought of using a cafetiere. I mean, I've got a Bodum teapot. No other makes are available, I should state, but yeah, I mean, a cafetiere must be a very easy way of
brewing. People just assume that it's just for coffee, and although they're designed for coffee, the plunger mechanism on a cafetiere is perfect for loose leaf tea. So you just put the tea leaves in, you brew it for 3 minutes as you would do normally, and then plunge it, and away you go. You got your tea, and it stops the brew at that point as well, just like it would with the coffee.
Don't let me stop you. Have you poured any tea yet?
I said I've been multitasking. I'm brewing it right now.
You're brewing it right now. So how long? I mean, little tips. Black tea. How long should it be brewed for?
Loose leaf tea, well, in fact, all tea really should be brewed for at least 90 seconds or more to get the best health benefits out of it. That said, some sort of smaller tea bag blends, which have smaller particles in there, they're actually designed to be brewed for a lot less than that, because that's where the average amount
of time
it's brewed
for. You're talking about PG-tip type tea bags?
And yeah, English breakfast style brands, or more classic supermarket brands, things like that. With regards to the health benefits, though, more than 90 seconds is actually what you should be doing. With regards to loose leaf tea, if you're making large leaf tea there, you really should be brewing it for a bit longer, at least 3 minutes or so, to get the best flavour out of there. And if you like it much stronger than that, brew it for much longer. It won't have any effect other than making it taste stronger.
And a little tip you gave me, things like difference with green teas and herbal teas and the temperature of the water.
Yeah, that's very, very important. So with regards to a black tea, sort of a classic English breakfast or an Earl Grey or something like that, then boiling water's fine. Just off the boil is absolutely fine as well. However, with regards to tea, which is lighter and more delicate, such as green teas or white teas or something along those lines, you really should treat it much more carefully anyway. And so put lower temperature water. And the easiest way to do that is to put the tea leaves or the tea bag in, if it's a green tea, put 1/3 cold water in there and then 2/3 boiling water. On top of that, you've got yourself about 80 degrees water. That's perfect. Absolutely perfect. It'll never taste bitter, and it'll brew really smoothly.
I think that's where most people go wrong. They think, oh, it's a cup of tea, boiling hot water.
That's right. And if you do that with green tea, that's why it always tastes bitter. So top tea tip there is just brew it at the right temperature.
There you go, listeners. Two top tea tips, tips even. Cafetiere and then not quite boiling water for the green and white teas.
Absolutely.
And with the pyramid tea bags, you produce those. Now, I know the listeners might not be aware of this, but you produce somewhere when you first started out, you have one machine, which I believe came from Japan. Is that right?
That's right. So when I first started the business, nearly 9 years ago now, everything we did was blended by hand. In fact, everything still now is blended by hand, but would be on very small scale, so 100 grams. And we still, minimum order quantity is just 100 grams of blended tea, and it's all bespoke. Going back to 2012, we bought a machine that can make the pyramid tea bags, and now we've just bought our seventh machine, and we can make approximately 1.2 to 1.3 million tea bags a week now. So
that is
lots of tea.
Yeah. That is some going. And they're working 24/7 or?
Not quite 24/7, but certainly long hours. So the team are sort of busy beaving away right now and making tea bags today. So that's all good.
And how many tea bags come out of the machine? I mean, it's quite an art to watch it just coming out.
Machines will do between 50 and 80 tea bags, depending on the machines. We've got two different types, but all Japanese made, all great, just pumping out the tea bags. But again, still everything's blended by hand, so we have to blend that much tea by hand. So it's over a ton a day now we're doing by hand.
Crumbs, that's some good going. And how can they get your tea? I mean, obviously you supply supermarkets, so you're not allowed to say on some of them, I believe.
Well, most of our clients that we supply are other brands, so they'll sell under their own brand. So really the majority of our business is own label. So that said, we'll supply individual people with their own bespoke blends right through to multinational.
There you go, Ivan. You can order another blend.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then right through to other tea brands, and they'll sell in sort of top department stores and places like that. And so really it is where people want something a little bit different. Bit quirky, but it can be just for an individual tea shop as well. So we will do that absolutely happily and create bespoke ranges of blends.
So what have you brewed up for us today? And is it ready yet?
It is ready now.
I'm possibly arid over here.
Okay, in which case then I shall just finish off the pouring out here. Now, yesterday I challenged my colleague Rob to provide me with two interesting blends that he happened to be making up yesterday. And so he's provided me with a black tea, which is a violet Earl Grey. So it's an Earl Grey which has violet notes in there. And also a strawberries and cream herbal infusion. So I've brewed up both of those. Which one would you like to try first?
I think I'll try the strawberries and cream first.
Strawberries and cream, right.
Yeah. As it's summer and we're just about to enter into Wimbledon, I mean, it's the best time of year for strawberries and cream, I reckon.
Right, well, here we go then. So I need to explain how I've brewed this. So first and foremost, I've used a classic tea taster's crockery. So it's like a mug, a small mug, and it has serrated teeth edge at the front. And you put the tea leaves in. You then put the hot water in.
I'll tweet a picture of this later, listeners.
You stick a lid on top of it. You let that infuse for 3 minutes. And then you tip it into a bowl. Right. And the serrated teeth edge at the front of it, when you do that, will actually will let the water or the liquid drain through, but leave the tea leaves in there. Right. And then what I have here is a bowl of the liquor, as it's called.
Right, okay.
And then in terms of tasting with a spoon, that's how we taste it. So we don't use fancy-shaped glasses, things like that. But...
A silver spoon?
I do have a silver spoon here, yes.
Oh,
so
God.
Yeah. My
is this where the phrase comes from, born with a silver spoon in his mouth?
Not quite. The tea industry really isn't that posh, quite frankly. No. It's very steeped in history, but at the same time...
Well, it's got you in it, so, you know... Oh, sorry, I shouldn't
it's
be rude to
hallmarked.
My guest.
Yeah. It's not hallmarked,
it's
Peter,
not hallmarked. Okay, so we won't be nicking that one.
So I'm using my silver spoon, which I've had now for 16 years. And as you can see here, I've literally slurped some of the silver plate off the top of the spoon there. So I'm going to explain...
Okay, be warned, listeners, this is going to be noisy.
Okay, so
hopefully it won't be messy.
Well, when I pass it over to you, for you to have a go, I've got to be a bit careful. I don't want to be spilling hot liquid everywhere. But okay, so I'm going to have a bit of a slurp. And by I do mean slurp when I say this. So let me just have a slurp of the tea just to make sure it's okay.
Ooh.
So there you go. So get those that slurp and go through again. Now, normally I would be spitting that out, but I won't do that in the studio here. So if I pass it over to you.
Okay, hang on a minute, listener.
Okay, so I'm passing the bowl over to you.
Yeah.
And a spoon for you.
Thank you.
All right, let's see. Now, be careful when you're slurping. Slurping's good, but don't do it too vigorously because I don't want you to choke, particularly live on air.
Exactly. Thank you, Alex.
That's good. Good slurp.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very distinctive strawberries and cream. So what's in this one?
Okay,
do you know what's in this one?
I do, yeah. So I can have a look at the pack here and I can work out what's in there just by seeing it. So hibiscus is the base of this, and that's what gives the red colour. And most fruit infusions would have hibiscus as a base. It gives a red colour.
Pass this over to Luke.
I'll pass out some spoons as well. There we go.
It's very refreshing, I have to say.
Be careful with the slurping, guys.
Yeah.
Really gentle on the slurping. Oh, that's good. That's good. Nice.
Well, we can tell he's had tasting experience. That's why
true.
I know Wolf there, Mr. Luke Wolf.
That's great.
Bit of dribble on your trousers there, though. But
yeah,
I was getting greedy with the second spoonful.
But it's very, very refreshing. I have to say, very refreshing.
So hibiscus, rosehip, orange, apple. Then strawberry pieces, some elderberries in there, and then some natural strawberry flavour as well. Just to give it
a bit of
the
aroma. Would be drunk without milk or with
milk? Yeah, absolutely. So really, you only should drink black tea with milk in there. And let's be honest, here in the UK, we are a bit of a milk drinking nation. Elsewhere in the world, milk is not taken quite so quite so regularly.
You mentioned something before to me about Lipton's being a, you know, the yellow label Lipton's tea is designed to not be drunk with milk.
Yeah, so that's a one size fits all type of tea, where everywhere in the world where tea is drunk without milk, that type of tea would be drunk. So let's say people, particularly from the UK, who would normally drink tea with milk going on holiday, and most of the tea that you'll be offered elsewhere on holiday in hotels will probably not be designed to be drunk with milk. And so no matter how hard you...
So hence the British taking their tea bags in their suitcase.
This is true. Absolutely. Yeah. And so they're trying to recreate that, the experience they're having at home. What they really should do is just drink the tea that's available there, but not put milk in it. Even if you normally drink tea with milk in there, don't put the milk in it, because it actually tastes better. It's designed not to be drunk with milk, and therefore don't put milk in it. And so you'll have people there who'll be, you'll watch them, they'll be mashing those tea bags, or they'll be brewing like four or five tea bags at a time and just leaving it in there for 25 minutes.
I've done that before, I have to say. I've done that before.
Most people have, but you don't need to do that. It's designed to be much more delicate and drunk without milk. So don't try and force an issue, and you'll find it much more pleasant experience, shall we say.
Okay. And second tea that we've got today?
Okay, so this is a Violet Earl Grey. So I just need to check I brewed it correctly. So another slurp from me. Okay, nice. There we go. So this is
one of my favourite. I have to say, I do love an Earl Grey.
So this is a little bit quirky. So it's Earl Grey. So it's black tea that's been flavoured with bergamot, and all Earl Grey has that classic combination there of bergamot and black tea. Good slurp. Oh, careful.
Yeah.
And then with this one, we've actually added a bit of violet in there. Are you trying to be too clever there? A bit of choking going on.
Keep talking.
So Earl Grey. Half population will drink it with milk, half will drink it without milk, and it's some people
get the violet notes. It comes in a bit afterwards. It's not immediate here, but it's very floral once it. You know.
So you should have that, yeah. So bergamot being a citrus tree, it does have subtle citrus elements in there, but also floral notes in there as well. Mm-hmm. So that's why it blends very nicely with other floral ingredients, other citrus ingredients as well. So you get all sorts of different types of Earl Greys, flavoured Earl Greys, and we certainly do loads of that as well. And make it a little bit quirky, make it a bit different too.
So your favourite tea?
Okay, it depends on my mood, but my favourite tea of all time, and it has been for many, many years now, is an Oolong Sichuan Tigwen Ying.
Okay, with otherwise brass knobs
known, on. Otherwise known as an Iron Goddess of Mercy. So it's an oolong tea, which is halfway between a green tea and a black tea. So all tea, green tea, black tea, white tea, oolong tea, pu'er, all different types of tea, all come from one plant, Camellia sinensis. And it's just how it's been processed that will change its characteristic from being a light green tasting tea or a heavier, more tannic black tea. Mm-hmm. And an oolong tea, my favourite, is halfway between a green tea and a black tea. So the only difference between the two, a green tea and a black tea, is about an hour of it sitting there changing colour like an apple would if you cut it open. And you leave that on the side for an hour, it changes colour. So that's the only difference between a green tea and a black tea, is
so
that 1 hour of
sitting
there.
What was it called again?
An oolong tea, otherwise known as a blue tea,
is
halfway between a green tea and a black tea.
Right. Isn't oolong tea very expensive?
It can be very expensive. So because it's less common, and there's certain countries in the world that will produce oolong teas, it tends to be countries such as China, Taiwan, South Korea. They produce the best oolongs, or they certainly have been producing very high-grade oolongs for many, many years. Other countries now are trying to produce oolong teas because they can see that there's a market for it, a growing market for it, and the cost of them is quite high, and so they make a better margin on this as well. But it doesn't necessarily have to be significantly more expensive as well. So you can get cheaper oolongs too, but like everything, you get what you pay for, really, to be honest. So, yeah.
Okay. And so if they want to buy your teas, or best way to do it is to contact @blends4friends on your Twitter handle, which is blends4friends.
That's correct.
And then, or @AlexProbyn, and that's A-L-E-X...
P-R-O-B-Y-N.
P-R-O-B-Y-N.
That's correct.
Or www.blends4friends.com.
That's correct. Yeah.
Jolly good. Well, thank you for that, Alex. We're going to have another quick record before we now move on to Mr. Luke Wolfe, and then we'll probably just have a general chit-chat at the end, I think, guys. But we've had a quick Twitter message come in from Love Chilies, who is Mr. Stevie Wood, who I think is replacing Jules next week, and he said there's a lot of drink talk on Scoff Quaff today, mixing his gin, wine and tea. So, yeah, it's quite a good mixture, I think, we've got today. But anyway, let's go on to our next song, which is, well, ubiquitously, it could only be one song for Luke Wolf and Wine. It's Red, Red Wine by UB40.
Red, red wine. What do you want to do about it?
There are small business owners like you claiming back on average £46,000 from the government. You see, the government wants to reimburse companies for innovation. What does this mean for you? Well, put simply, if your staff have spent time and resources developing your business, you could claim back cash. We're RIFT. We're specialists in preparing claims for small businesses. To find out from RIFT if your business is eligible, visit innovationreward.co.uk.
Channel Radio. Okay, so that was Red Red Wine with UB40, and that introduces our next guest, Mr. Luke Wolf. And I think he's just popped a bottle.
I have indeed.
I
thought, as it was a drink show, Peter, it'd only be right to bring something to drink.
Well, that's very kind of you, Luke. You shouldn't have. Unfortunately, Jules isn't here to partake in this, so she'll just have to. And she's been very quiet on Twitter, I have to say. She obviously hasn't got a Wi-Fi signal, so can't listen in. I have got a couple of messages here whilst you're pouring that out. One, the Fat Carrot, who is a regular here on Scoff Quaff. She unfortunately won't be at Bearsted Farmers Market this Sunday. And then also I've been asked to give a plug to a comedy night, I believe it is, at the 2nd of July. Very funny, Kerry Godliman is headliner at the Hotel Maidstone in Maidstone for a comedy event. So that's those two down out of the way. And I believe earlier on there was Telcare that was listening in as well, who are listening in today, enjoying the drinks-related show. So what have we got here, Luke? And tell us a bit about it.
Okay, so I decided to bring one of my favourites at the moment, which is sparkling wine from Chapeldown. It's 2009 Blanc de Blanc, so it's a sparkling wine made 100% from Chardonnay.
Right.
And just recently it's won 2 gold medals from a couple of wine competitions, so it's a favourite with some of the fans and writers and tasters. I'll just pass these out to you.
Okay, so there's an art to tasting, isn't there, on the wine? Very different to the way the way Alex has just tasted in terms of slurping and...
Sorry, Peter, before you do that, listeners wouldn't have seen what you just did there. As soon as it was poured out, you were reaching over to grab it. You weren't quite the same and quite so keen with my tea there, were you? So
well, I'm sorry.
Oh, the glass is cold, though. Your glass was hot, so...
Yeah, exactly. Actually, you're further away, Alex, don't worry.
It's interesting you bring that up, actually, Peter, because though it may be slightly different in the vessel that the liquid's carried in, actually, a lot of it's quite similar. With regards to taste, we can only really taste 5 different things, you know, sweet, sour, bitter, salt, and umami, which is a savoury sort of flavour. All of these other flavours that we taste or we perceive to taste actually comes from aroma, the same in Andy's gin and Alex's tea. So with regards to the tea, Alex was slurping off the spoon to aerate the liquid to release these aroma compounds, which is actually what you then perceive to be your strawberry or your lavender, for example. We do the same with wine. We start off by swirling the glass. That will liberate some of these compounds. We can get our nose in there, and that's how we can...
It's a very generous
identify.
Measure you're giving me here. I've got to drive home.
I know. Sorry about that, Peter. Yeah. But I heard you like generous measures. So, and with regards to this wine that we got now, I think if you can smell it, it's got some really nice sort of baked apple notes, citrus type notes as well, and a slight sort of yeasty breadiness to it, which I think it almost smells rich in flavour, I believe.
So how does this compare to a champagne?
In the comparison, same grapes. I mean, in champagne, they use Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Pinot Meunier mainly. This is 100% Chardonnay. The process itself is the same.
Right.
It's fermented in bottles, so the sparkling wine process starts off like any other winemaking process. You'll make a still wine. Then it goes into bottle where yeast and sugar is added, and it then goes through a secondary fermentation, which is where it retains its bubbles.
Do we have a ramener like they do in France with the champagne? Or is that done...
Not much these days. We actually use gyro pallets that can do what takes months in champagne, or did. Is a machine now that can do it in 48 hours.
A gyro pallet will come along and move all the bottles.
Well, the bottles are loaded into a pallet. I think there's just over 500 that goes in there, and then it's on a timer on a machine, and it will turn and twist and move around. And the idea of that is that the yeast that was added into the bottle to make, for the secondary fermentation, is to get the yeast down to the end neck of the bottle to actually get that out. So it takes a couple of days, and thereby the process then goes on to disgorging, where we can remove it and so forth.
Shatters an illusion. I always love the idea of being a ramener.
Apparently, it takes 7 years to... It did take 7 years to do an apprenticeship to do
what,
it.
What, to be a ramener?
Yeah, apparently so.
Just
going back to the tasting, though, Peter, I think we carry on the aeration in the mouth. So, again, be careful. But if you put the wine into your mouth and sort of try and suck a small amount of air through...
Peter's practically finished his already.
Now then, Alex, don't start casting aspersions.
You should really be able to pick up more sort of flavours... And the real richness of the wine. I think in particular, this wine has quite a high acidity, but that matches up with that richness as well as giving you a slight freshness. So this would be great as an aperitif, a wedding reception or something like that. But I think also, with fish and chips on the beach, or, maybe smoked salmon or something like that. Oysters even.
They say oysters and champagne aren't a good mix, or, sparkling wine and oysters.
I haven't heard that. I think they go pretty well.
I've seen that on menus in the past, that, you shouldn't drink champagne with oysters.
Well, that maybe they're trying to push something else. But in my mind, a really decent sparkling wine always matches up well with oysters for sure.
Okay. So how did you get into the wine industry, Luke?
Well, I actually started my career out as a mortgage broker, and when the recession hit about 8 years ago, I found myself without a job anymore, and decided to take a little bit of time out and do a little bit of soul searching and see really what I wanted to do in my life. And during that time, I travelled around and visited a lot of vineyards and wineries.
Here in the UK or abroad?
Both, actually, yes.
Right.
And I found that I really, really did have a passion for wine, and I wanted to know more about it, didn't know anything at all, really. And so had just got online, had a look, found there was a few wine courses. I did some wine courses with the Wines and Spirits Educational Trust, which
I think they've been guests on the show.
Yeah, people can do that most places around the world now. And that really got me going. I then found out that there was a place in Plumpton, which is Plumpton College, which...
just outside Brighton, isn't
that's
it?
That's right.
Yeah.
That does wine courses, wine business as well as wine production courses.
Right.
And I enrolled in to do a viticulture and enology course, which is the science of grape growing and the science of winemaking.
And how long was that?
The course itself was 3 years, and it's a pretty intense course. I don't want to shatter more illusions for you, though, Peter, but... The romance of winemaking is left on holiday, to be honest with you, when you're walking mm-hmm. around and tasting the wine. It's hard work, back-breaking work most of the time.
I remember talking to a vineyard grower in France who basically said that, you know, he hand prunes all his vines, and that happens sort of like, I think, sort of January, February time.
Yeah.
He starts, I think, just on New Year's Day, and he's out there for 2 months. So, lovely views. I mean, he's got views of the Canigou Mountains, of the Pyrenees, and you know, but he's cutting 30,000 vines or something by hand.
Yes, and RSI is a common injury course during those months. But it's not just the pruning.
He had powered pliers, big powered pliers.
Yeah, some people use electric secateurs, but others like to use manual. I mean, it must be said that it's not just pruning that's done by hand. I mean, we do a lot of our canopy management. We harvest by hand. So ultimately, that has to be reflected somewhere with that high cost of labour.
People come along and pick grapes? Is that...
We use professional teams of pickers that come over and pick the grapes. And like I say, it's hard, hard work.
So like the hop growers or the old hop pickers that would come down from London, the romance of that isn't possible in the UK?
You might find it with some of your more local producers, and I do urge any listeners that have anyone local to them to go and visit them and try their wines and try and see if there's any opportunities to get involved, because I know that some of the smaller producers do rely
crushing
on...
crushing the grapes at the feet, that doesn't go on these
days. No, sadly not. It's all moved up a notch since then, Peter. But it really is... go down, get involved. If you want to know more, it's all out there for you to see. But for me personally, like I say, I did my degree, and that was a big opener for me and allowed me to go and work in sort of New Zealand and California and France before I found myself back here in the UK.
Right. And you now work for, well, Chapeldown, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. I started working for Chapeldown a year ago.
Right.
And I'm now one of their viticulturalists and manage one of their newly planted vineyards, which I finished.
So how many vineyards have they got in Kent now?
We have a number of vineyards. We have about seven that we look after and run ourselves, but we also buy in quite a lot of contracted fruit. However, we're actually going through we're going through a big stage of increasing in size. Mm-hmm. And we just planted 82 acres just last month, which equates to about 153,000 vines. And we're looking at increasing that year on year.
How long before the grapes will be usable on those?
We're looking at around 3 to 4 year period. It does depend on the season.
Investment. It's a bit like you, Andy, and your gin. You know, it's a long time from fruition or, you know, starting something till you actually get an end product.
It is. I think in Luke's case, the timeline is quite significantly longer, and clearly the risks are higher.
Yeah.
I think that one disadvantage we have in the wine industry, maybe compared to my two fellow guests here, is that we can't add flavour when we make wine. The grapes have to be ripe, but they have to have the flavour. If their flavour's not there at the beginning, the winemaker can't produce a good wine, I think. Whereas Andy actually is the opposite. He starts with a neutral spirit, and he wants to add flavour with his different cocktail.
And the same with tea, in a way.
And exactly the same.
Or blending a tea, definitely.
We are certainly held to the weather. and that plays a big part. But also,
must be a big challenge in the UK.
Yeah, well, it is. But
or getting easier because global warming. You know, that's a benefit of global warming, perhaps.
I wouldn't. We like to say climate change, Peter. That's a more PC way.
I prefer global warming personally.
I think you'll find that. You don't have to be any sort of scientist to know that it is certainly heating up here in the UK. But I think also it's getting slightly damper. It's a bit more humid,
yeah, and that can cause, well on that front.
Yeah, and that can cause issues within itself. So, but what we're finding here, actually, the reason why the UK and England in particular is producing such great award-winning wines at the moment is our knowledge on grape growing and wine production is improving, and we're not held by any strict laws like our friends in France or Italy are, and this allows us to implement new ideas and ultimately be at the forefront of innovation when it comes into wine production.
So in your short and illustrious career in viticultural doings, what's been your proudest moment?
I think there's been a few. I mean, certainly when I got a first class degree, so I was pretty chuffed with that. But all right. I think actually work-wise was when I bought in my first harvest and I was responsible for that on my own. Right. It was a small harvest for a small boutique producer just down in East Sussex. Right. And I think we brought in about 4 or 5 tonnes, and I nearly cried at the end of it because I actually run this vineyard on my own. I'd done everything myself other than pick the grapes, and it was pretty emotional, to say the least.
And what wine did you produce?
That's Mayfield Expression, which is a great sparkling wine. Slightly different to what we're tasting here. It is a boutique style. Everything's done on a very, very small, intimate scale.
So how many bottles did that five tonnes, you say, you produced?
Yes.
So how many bottles did that produce at the end of it?
You're probably looking at, I guess that they were around about 5,000, 4,000 or 5,000, but it depends really on the blend. And actually, not all of that wine harvested would have gone to making just that sole one wine.
Is that the one you used at your wedding?
Yes. Yeah. So
I never got to taste it. Damn.
I'll have to get you another bottle. I must also mention that we actually had some of Alex's tea at our wedding as well, which was absolutely great as well.
Yeah. So I can't remember what the blend was. Can you remember what the blend was?
Classic black tea with a little twist of Golden Monkey King in there.
That's right. Yes. Golden Monkey King. That's an interesting name. Tell me more about the Golden Monkey King.
In terms of a black tea, it actually isn't black at all. It looks very yellow and sort of golden tips. It's just the youngest buds of the tea bush that have then been fully oxidised to make it a black tea. But at the same time, because it's just the youngest buds, it never comes out completely black like a classic black tea would. Very, very malty, almost honey notes in there. Exquisite quality black tea from China. And we don't buy a huge amount of it. We only probably get a couple of hundred kilos of that a year, but it's very expensive tea. So when we blend it in blends, it's
for very expensive. Come on, give us some eye-watering figures.
Okay, so if someone wants to buy just 100 grams of that, which is enough for about 40 cups of tea, then I think we currently charge about £30 per 100 grams for that. So
crumbs.
But it's very worth it. Yeah, as I said earlier, you get what you pay for.
Makes wine look more affordable now, doesn't it?
It does. And gin. Yeah. What about in terms of gin, Andy? How expensive can a gin get?
Our gin retails at around £35. There are some gins going up to 60, 70, 80, some of the smaller runs.
Right.
It's unusual. Most gins are the craft gins in the £28 to £38 category. Right.
And a proprietary gin, it's been years since I bought a...
Well, if you go to one of the supermarkets when they're doing 10, loss leaders, probably £12 to £14.
Yeah, it's worth paying for the quality at the end, isn't it?
Yeah. Can I just add there, though, Peter? Like, I think with regards to with wine in particular, everything we're doing is hand harvested. Like I say, it's all hand, and it does get reflected in the bottle price. But a good English sparkling wine is somewhere around the £25 mark. If you look at one of your champagnes from the main houses like Moët Chandon or Veuve Clicquot, you're looking at around £35 mark. So I think not only are you getting quality, but also value for money.
Yeah, I quite agree. I mean, Kent seems to have a real burst of sparkling wines, what with Hush Heath and a couple of the others that are around in the county as well. I mean, there is so many that one can choose from.
Oh, most definitely. I think that I cannot urge people enough, if they're into wine, and most people tend to be these days, I think there's certainly been a boom in wine drinkers over the last 10, 15 years. Don't be embarrassed. Go out, ask questions, meet the people that are making the wine. I think you'll be amazed how open a lot of them are. They're very proud of what they're doing and want to share their experiences.
I have fond memories of actually coming down to what was, I think, Chapel Down before it was Chapel Down, when it was Tenterden Vineyards. I bought some Swiss friends down, and we did a tour of Kent. We came down, bought the wine from there. We carried on down to Rye and bought the fish from Rye. And I can't remember where else we ended up, buying some cheese from somewhere else or something else. And it was just a magical day out that you could go and get all those products on your doorstep. I mean, probably did about 120 miles and wasn't particularly green when it comes to, you know, the food miles that I did. But, you know, it's a great way of learning about what's on your doorstep.
It's certainly what it's all about at the moment. Everyone's into local produce, local food, drinks, you know, albeit juices, spirits, alcohols, you know, albeit, you know, people want to buy local, and the restaurants are buying into it. The public are buying into it, and, you know, long may it continue.
So, top tip when it comes to buying wine?
I think don't be fooled by what the supermarkets are trying to force you. Just because something says it's half price, it doesn't actually mean that it is. Mm-hmm. I think, like Alex mentioned before, you do get what you pay for with wine. I think that you be aware that with a bottle of wine that maybe you're buying for £5, I think less than a pound of that will actually go into the wine itself.
Yeah, because the rest is duty.
However, duty, GM. But there's a lot of fixed costs involved, like the labelling, the bottling, even the tax. It doesn't matter if it's a £300 bottle of wine or a £3 bottle of wine. A lot of those numbers are fixed. So my advice would be that if you usually go out and you spend £5-6 a bottle, try go and spend £8 and see what you get for it. You'll probably find you'll get more than twice the quality of wine for not twice the price.
Okay. And Andy, you know, obviously a lot of craft gins out there now. I mean, it's a growing industry.
Gin has been in the doldrums for many years. It was really only drunk with a mixer. The craft gin industry is now taking off in the UK as it has in the US. Yeah, there's a lot of competition, but there's also room for a number of quality gins going out there. As Luke said, the buying public like a good provenance, they like a story, and they certainly appreciate the
story
good quality.
You know, 200 years and we haven't had a gin in Kent, have we?
No, we're the first to be distilled in the county for 200 years, and with whisky, as far as we can make out, the first ever distilled, certainly legally.
yes. And I suppose the actual legal process of distilling is quite a complex one, is it not?
Well, we certainly needed a lot of licences. We've got compounders, rectifiers, distillers' licences. We're a trade warehouse, so we're bonded. All of those needed separate licences, and they took a long time to come through, which is why our lovely still is called Patience, because we needed lots of it.
Perfect name. And tea, I mean, you're importing from all over the world, Alex.
Yep, so we import from approximately 60 countries around the world, so teas, herbs, spices, flavourings, and all those kind of things there. But we now export to as many countries, which is good. But tea itself, similarly to both of what other guests have been talking about, it's a growing trend where people want to understand a bit more about the provenance of the products they're buying, whether it be locally sourced or whether it be something just a bit different. And particularly with tea, where people have travelled around the world and seen tea being drunk in different ways around the world, they want to emulate that back home here and either bring the tea back themselves or indeed then go to very specialist producers and packers who are producing those teas from those particular origins. So it's a thriving business. It's the top end of the market, most certainly, is a thriving business.
Good. Well, that's it. We've come to the end of Scoff Quaff for this week. And I would just love to say thank you very much to all my guests. So that's Luke Wolfe, Dr. Andy Norman, and Alex Probyn.